Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking with Dr. Chris Rosa, President and CEO of the New York-based Viscardi Center. Chris is also Vice Chair of the Board of Directors of the Muscular Dystrophy Association and former Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs at the City University of New York. We're here at the MDA's 2023 Clinical and Scientific Conference in Dallas, Texas, talking about accessible air travel. Thanks so much for being with us today, Chris.
Thank you, Larry.
Let's talk about accessible air travel. What's this all about?
As you know, air travel is critically important to work, lifestyle, for thousands and thousands of Americans. And people with disabilities are routinely excluded from key elements of air travel because of barriers that have persisted over many years. While rights and opportunities for Americans with disabilities in all other aspects of American life are governed by the Americans with Disabilities Act, which provide comprehensive access for people with disabilities. The air travel and the airline industry is mostly regulated by the Air Carriers Access Act, which was passed four years before the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act and has much more limited protections and guarantees of equal access for people with disabilities to air travel than does the ADA and all other aspects of American life. And at MDA, we're working with a broadly based coalition of other like-minded organizations representing access and opportunities for people with disabilities to expand access to air travel by amending the Air Carriers Access Act.
So let's start at the beginning, comparing air travel to that of train travel or obviously by a private car or a bus. Why in this day and age is it so hard for somebody who uses a wheelchair to be able to travel by air and remain in his or her wheelchair throughout the entire flight?
It's a fair question. One consideration and the primary one that the airline industry cites has to do with safety standards. And unlike train and over the road travel, securing somebody's power wheelchair in an aircraft where all the elements need to be crash tested and safety rated poses a significant challenge. It's not that it can't be done, but I think understandably the airline industry has been very conservative about ensuring that the tolerances are established before taking any such action. And quite frankly, I think it's a revenue issue. As we all know, on air travel, the seats have gotten smaller and smaller. And the notion that you would lose two or three of those seats to accommodate one wheelchair user in his or her wheelchair might seem prohibitive for an airline industry where the profit margin is paramount.
Okay. As a person who uses a wheelchair, have you faced discrimination or inconvenience as an air traveler?
I think that is a tremendous understatement, Larry. I think that when you're an air traveler with a disability, you very much feel as though you check your civil rights curbside with your luggage. That the moment that you enter into an airport, you feel as though your rights and opportunities are no longer equal to other air travelers. And I think it bears out in the end, in the data on just how many wheelchairs, particularly power wheelchairs, are damaged or destroyed every year by the airlines in the course of air travel.
Do you have data on that?
I have to get the most recent statistics, but the data collected by the FAA alone reports that more than 2,000 wheelchairs are damaged per month by the airline industry. And that's only the ones where those incidents are reported to the FAA. We're thinking that many more are not being reported. They're just resolved informally or not resolved at all with the airlines.
But don't the airlines have a monetary responsibility to compensate passengers for this?
They do, and they've gotten better at that and much more efficient. And in some respects, I find that the most chilling aspect of the whole experience, that in the cost-benefit analysis that is, a large industry like the airline industry. Airlines have determined that it's in their financial interest to control that cost as best as they can, but to accept it as a general operating cost and tolerate millions of dollars in payments for replacing and repairing wheelchairs, because it's still financially in their greater interest than actually creating a truly accessible model for travel for people with disabilities.
But it's not just the cost of replacing a wheelchair. It's the extreme inconvenience of being somebody who needs that wheelchair during the flight.
It seems you're 100% right, Larry. Couldn't have said it better. But the human cost seems not to be included in that calculus.
So when you, for example, board an aircraft, this way of treatment is specifically a safety issue for the airlines. It's not a security issue.
That's correct. Although I would not presume to speak for the airline, but primarily the concerns shared by the airline has to do with how could you appropriately secure a wheelchair in a cabin in flight with all the G's that have to be considered for the tolerances for everything that's in the aircraft. And we understand that. We actually have a very valued partner at MDA, another organization, a sister organization called All Wheels Up, where they do their own fundraising to fund their own crash tests of secured wheelchairs and other durable medical equipment to demonstrate that it can be done.
But it's not just the, when you say aircraft, you have to have certain kinds of aircraft that can accommodate a wheelchair to begin with.
For sure.
So you need a minimum size. We're talking 737s, Airbus, et cetera. Obviously, somebody who's in a wheelchair like you cannot fly on a tiny Cessna.
That's correct.
Okay. So what are the minimum standards necessary for somebody in a wheelchair
to fly?
Well, just speaking conceptually, I don't know what the actual standards are, but conceptually, you would need an aircraft with wide enough entry door to be able to board the plane without having to transfer. There would need to be sufficient space in one of the first rows in order to accommodate a wheelchair. Typical width is 30 inches wide. And I think we would all feel blessed these days to get a single airline seat that was 30 inches wide. And of course, the restrooms. A restroom would have to be large enough to accommodate a wheelchair. And we all know the size of cabin restrooms.
At this point, are there any airlines you can name that have maybe done something a little extra, gone the extra mile to accommodate people in wheelchairs?
I don't know that. I mean, I think that the industry as a whole has paid much more attention to the experiences of travelers with disabilities. Things still unravel, but I think there's a heightened consciousness of it. And, I think all the large carriers have dedicated resources and offices to support travelers with disabilities as they travel. But no one entity has a record that I think they ought to be particularly proud of.
Mm. And we're not talking here just about rare diseases. This can be anybody who can't walk. Anybody, whether you have spinal muscular atrophy or you have Friedreich's ataxia or anything.
You're 100% correct. I think it affects people with rare diseases on a lot of important levels, largely because of how we seek and travel to clinical trials. And right. Air travel is the linchpin of that. So not only does it preclude us from flying for leisure and for work, but in terms of us actually getting connected to the clinical trials and treatments that we've been longing for, that's a critical last mile.
So you're basically limited to clinical trials in your area that you can either drive to or travel by train.
For many people with very significant disabilities brought upon by rare diseases, that's exactly the case.
So let's talk about advocacy, Washington, at the federal level. What is your organization doing about that?
So MDA is working, and particularly our advocacy effort, is working with other like-minded disability rights organizations on efforts to amend the Air Carriers Access Act to give it more teeth, and also to establish the right of personal action for people who whose lives are disrupted and damaged and whose durable medical equipment is damaged so that they would be able to potentially sue an air carrier for damages. Right now, that's precluded under the Air Carriers Access
Act. And is the airline industry fighting you on this?
I would never presume to speak to that for them, but I don't think they're thrilled about it.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Only that on May 10th, we're asking all your listeners to watch MDA's advocacy website. It's going to be our legislative day of action in Washington, D.C., where we're going to be advocating on a range of issues that impact access, opportunity, and wellness for people with rare diseases, particularly this Air Carriers Access Act, an accessible air travel issue, but also increased funding for the NIH, for research for rare diseases. So look for our website, and we'd love to have you involved.
In case you missed it, May 10th, Day of Action, MDA. Chris, thank you so much for talking with us. This is Larry Luxner, Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.